This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
I have long been respectful to the many faiths people hold. Having grown up in a small town where the reborn movement took hold and turned half the population into a door-to-door sales force of Bible-thumping fake Christ followers, I have walked carefully around the discussions of faith, God, and Christianity. That also has meant that even though I disagree with other faiths, I have respected others' beliefs as theirs. However, much of that is now changing. We are in a spiritual war where the evil in our world is bound by a common keystone, and that's the exploitation and ritual sacrifice of children. Christianity is the only world religion that gives you an adequate philosophical, logical, and theological argument for the uniqueness and inherent value of humanity. Following Christ means following Christ's views of humanity. Take away God's or Christ's view of humanity, and you end up with a self-centric view of the world that allows you to believe you can become a God yourself. And once there, any horror against humanity can be justified. Welcome to the Bards of War podcast. My name is Scott Kesterson. I am the director and producer of the war documentary Bards of War, Fighting is Everything, and you are listening to episode 23, Faith, Gehenna, and the Thread That Binds. Before I get started, I want to talk to you about nationalism. Our soldiers put their lives on the line every day to protect the values of the nation and its citizens. Seldom do we have the opportunity to see these values shared with equal courage and conviction by our most loyal allies. The documentary film Bards of War, Fighting is Everything, is a powerful story of the soldiers of Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry fighting against the Taliban to root out their criminal, drug, and human trafficking networks in southern Afghanistan. The film takes the viewer into the world of the warrior's ethos of conviction, ruthlessness, and righteousness, and the soldier's commitment to the values that put a nation and its citizens ahead of themselves. You can buy the digital download of Bards of War, Fighting is Everything at bardsofwarfilm.com. That's bardsofwarfilm.com. And with your purchase, you will be supporting the independent content creations of Bards of War on social media and for future projects. Thank you for your support. Now let's get back to the podcast. So before we begin today, I need to provide a listener advisory. We're going to be getting into the topic of children. Some of these issues are difficult to deal with, and some of the topics are not going to be easy to hear. As a supplement or preparatory for this episode, I would highly encourage you to go listen to In Pursuit of Truth's Kumantang show that was posted on August 29th, 2019. Sir Patrick has done an incredible job of research and bringing some things together. It's disturbing, it's difficult to watch and listen to, but we are not in an era where we can hide anymore. The awakening that we are in requires us to be strong, to face some very difficult truths, and only then will we be set free. I have always looked at the Bible as a parable of life, as a deep philosophy to guide us, to learn from, and let it teach us in the ways from the past and in the things we face in the future. But what I find interesting, as a student of history, having a degree in history, is how the farther we move along, especially in this era right now of the Great Awakening, how so many things pop up in the Bible, not just as parable, but as historical fact. And what is discussed in the Bible in the past is now showing up in the present today. The topic of children are one of those. Think about Judah, after the Assyrian defeat of the northern tribes of Israel, as discussed in 2 Kings. They fall so far off the track that they begin to delve into child sacrifice in the Valley of Hinnom, worshiping Moloch. Further on, in 2 Kings 23, King Josiah tears down all of the altars so that child sacrifice cannot be done anymore. Now, the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom was originally called Jibin Hinnom, and it was a deep, narrow glen to the south of Jerusalem, where the idolatrous Jews offered their children in sacrifice to the god Moloch. This valley afterwards became the common receptacle for all of the refuse of the city. Here, the dead bodies of animals and of criminals and of all kinds of filth were cast and consumed by a fire that was kept always burning. And so in the process of time, this became the image of the place of everlasting destruction. So when you translate Jabin Hinnon to Greek, it becomes Gehenna, which is Jesus' normal word for describing hell. Interesting. Literally a hell on earth. But if we look carefully across our world and we look at the fall of cities, the filth, the loss of morality, the loss of values, the loss of ethics, the rejection of Christianity, we begin to see a very similar pattern. We see the rise of unrestrained pursuit of desires, even if they're the darkest and most horrific things. And from the perspective of the globalists and the perspective of this progressive movement, all things are justifiable and all things are valid because it's a human desire. The concept of being centered around God is cast aside, and with it, each person is elevated to a position where they can assume the role or believe they can assume a role of a God themselves. And all things ultimately lead to children. Now, In Pursuit of Truth presented what Kumantang was about. It's horrific. It's the practice of taking a fetus and slow roasting it over a fire until the skin tightens up and it dries out and is just skin and bone, after which it's painted with a lacquer and coated with gold flake. These idols are then worshipped, and the spirit of these idols is encouraged to be adopted by those that own the idols, so that they quite literally have a child's spirit in their life that's supposed to provide them with protection as long as they nurture it and feed it and give it the proper attention. The concept alone is sick, but the reflection of how deep this corruption goes to a story that he listed of where a number of these idols were found, and people flocked to the Buddhist temple to pray for the idols and then begin to ask if they themselves could use these idols in their own lives. These idols had been confiscated by authorities, and yet these people desired to have them part of their lives. It's a practice of desperation. What this reflects is this seeking of salvation. People in these faiths outside Christianity find salvation through idol worship or spiritual beings they bring into their lives or some sort of meditative practice to elevate them up, to rise above people and become a demigod or a god. You see it in the meditative type faiths, which I would list as Buddhism, Hinduism, Tibetan Buddhism. You even see the elevation of an individual into a demigod type status in Islam. And that is represented by the series of things that you have to do to buy your way into greatness in Islam, which then allows you to do the migration to the Hajj. And once you go to the Hajj, you've achieved the five pillars, and you've now elevated up to a higher level of Islam to lead people and ultimately to ascend to heaven. The principle of the Pharisees that Christ pushed back so hard on was based on that sort of failure in the teachings of Christianity, where the Pharisees were requiring donations or tithings, the giving of your daughters, which is a suggestion of pedophilia early on. And Christ rebelled against it to make a statement very clearly that that was not the way to heaven nor the way to God, but it was an elite's way of controlling access to God to gain wealth and power for themselves and many other things like the dark arts of exploiting kids. So let's look at some numbers to see what we're really about. As of December 31st, 2018, there were over 41.9 million abortions performed worldwide. And that comes from the World Meter's statistic. Now look at this in comparison to other deaths. By contrast to that, 8.2 million people died from cancer in 2018, 5 million from smoking, and 1.7 million died from HIV or AIDS. The largest number of deaths of humans globally by the end of 2018 was due to abortions. So this statistic alone demonstrates one of the main reasons that the progressive movement works so hard to prevent the definition of life at conception, because they want to not be able to call this a death of humans. Now let's look at kids. In doing some research, it's unbelievable how hard it is to find the numbers of missing children worldwide. And much of this comes from a whole convolution of problems in those statistics. One is that they've redefined what a missing child is so many different ways, it's hard to collate the statistics. So there's no standard definition worldwide. And these are our kids. That's the future of humanity. Then you take the way countries collate their statistics. Many are not available. Some statistics are inaccurate due to underreporting or underrecognition of the problem. Some statistics are carelessly entered into databases, so it's difficult to even find case information. And worse yet, deletion of records is also a problem because many countries delete the records once the case is closed. So there are 195 countries in the world, and I'm going to read off the statistics from 9 countries. That's the ones I've been able to put together. Beginning with Australia, an estimated 20,000 children were missing in 2018. In Canada, that estimate is 45,288 in 2018. In Germany, it's estimated that there were 100,000 children missing in 2018. In India, approximately 96,000 children went missing in 2018. In Jamaica, there's an estimated 1,984 children that went missing. In Russia, an estimated 45,000 children went missing. In Spain, an estimated 20,000 children went missing. In the United Kingdom, an estimated 112,853 children went missing. And in the United States, an estimated 460,000 children went missing in 2018. Just looking at the statistics, you can see the center of the world's problem of child harvesting, child exploitation, and it's right here in the United States. The closest competitor with these numbers to the United States is the United Kingdom. That somehow is just not unexpected. Yet the United Kingdom's number is 1/4 of the United States, and these numbers are probably underestimated. Where are they going? Why are children such a commodity? And the answers are so dark that it's literally like stepping outside the matrix once you start to realize it. The global network of child trafficking, to include children for sexual trafficking, to include children for ritual abuse or sacrifice, to include abortions, which are a central part to the harvesting of fetuses for both ritual and age-extending sciences, all geared towards the elite, is an integrated web that works from a local, small-town community all the way up to the highest centers of power, to include Washington, D.C., London, Rome, China, Beijing. It's horrific. And the problem is, so many of these faiths that are human-centric fall into that place of using children for something to benefit them for a long life, for good luck, for increase in personal power and wealth. And just like the Bible listed in Kings, we even have seen it within the followers of the Christian faith, but not the followers of Christ. I want to be clear about that. Because following Christ means you have this high level appreciation for the value of humanity and its love and respect. It's not self. When we separate ourselves from faith and God, we become subject to the influences of evil. And it's right in the Bible, Psalm 127:3, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward." One of the things about Christian faith is free will, the will to choose to follow and believe, the will not to. And the consequences are fairly clear: everlasting life or something other, that whether it's the eternal fire or whatever. But my point is, it's free will. Here's the manipulation that happens on that topic of abortion. And it all centers on this women's right to choose. Now, why is that? Is it really? In Psalm 127:3, it says that it's the fruit of the womb, a reward. Life throughout any species is valued by its mother. When a woman makes a choice by free will to sacrifice their child, they are contributing to the power of evil, which most likely centers somewhere back to Moloch or Baal. The aspect that it's free will takes away the primary role that God gave humans, which is to protect the heritage from the Lord, Psalm 127:3. And worse yet, this convoluted spin that we put on everything related to children obscures one of the most principal issues of our world, Ephesians 5:11. "Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them." I mean, look at how those that give abortions work so hard to justify and defend it. Why? Because they know very well that it's not just an abortion. I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit, because I've given a lot of thought historically of how we have seen an acceleration of this evil in our world. And it's grown almost exponentially into the period we're at right now. And you have to ask why. How is it that it's taken so much hold? We can come up with 100 different answers. There's one thing I don't think we give enough credit to, because it centers on what so many of these dark cult-like faiths, or whatever you want to call them, belief systems, center on, which is to bring spirits into their life. You would think that there's got to be a limited number of those, right? But if we're producing 41.9 million souls aborted every year, and lost because their protection from the mother was willfully relinquished to an abortion clinic, we start to see the ability for this to grow exponentially in the dark arts as more and more of these lost souls become available for them to round up. That gets a little esoteric, but it's the numbers themselves speak a certain truth. As a principal guide to who we are, who we should be as humanity, and in the construct of the lessons taught in the Bible, we only have to look at Psalm 82, 3-4. Quote, give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. That falls right in line with what I discussed in my programs last week, righteousness, conviction, and ultimately ruthlessness. We have an obligation as Christians, as followers of Christ, not to sit on the couch and sit on the sideline and let this happen. We have an obligation to stand up and be heard and to protect those that cannot protect themselves. It is so amazing for me as my own personal journey moving across my life, how religiously conservative I have become, not because I chose to be, but because the more that I have learned in the study of history, in the patterns of man, in the corruptibility of humankind, and of the evils that people are willing to partake in and make part of their life, of the corruption of faiths and the willingness to sacrifice nearly anything, especially children, for their own protection, their own empowerment, their own desires of personal gain. I've moved from a place of broad tolerance to a place of increasing intolerance to other faiths because the corruptibility is so high. And I also need to add, the Christian church is not excluded from this criticism because we already know that within the network of churches, there have been predatorial, pedophile networks that have been exploiting kids. Those are not followers of Christ. They're just corrupted souls, and they might as well be worshiping the Moloch for all I'm concerned. We all have the questions in our life of where did we come from? What is the meaning of our life? How should we live morally? And what ultimately is our destiny? I can weave faith with science, especially when you tie in the studies of quantum physics and the power of faith. But at the end of the day, the Bible provides the framework to find answers to origins, meaning, morality, and destiny. It is so amazing to me to sit here and have this conversation right now, especially as I explained in the beginning of how I grew up. I grew up in a household strong and rich with faith, but in a community corrupted by the usury of Christ's word, because of desperation to find meaning through reborn and justify whatever they could do through that process. It was disgusting to experience. And it turned me far away from ever speaking boldly about my beliefs. I held it deep inside. Those are long gone times now. There are moments that we hit when suddenly the picture opens up, when you start to see the integration of the problem and the keystone, the thread that binds everything. And the deeper that I've researched and the more rabbit holes I've followed, it always leads to the same thing, the obsession of power and the use of God's children to get there. If you are living in a life where you want to bury your head in the sand, there are consequences for that. Because not making action, not standing up, is a vote. At the center of the awakening across this great world is the requirement that we stand up and demand justice, and most importantly, stand up to protect God's greatest gift, the children. For those who have not veered down the dark rabbit holes of the horrors that these people are willing to do to children, I would only caution you if you are inclined, because it will transform you in a way that many people are not prepared to see or experience. The sickness that sits within our ruling elites, the sickness that these members of these various cults and connected rings of child traffickers and abusers are willing to go to appease their own desires, to try to gain personal power or wealth, to try to connect to their dark and evil god of Moloch or Baal, is so dark you can lose yourself, especially if you aren't grounded and anchored in faith, God, and Christ. And I'm not exaggerating here. There is evil in this world. And when you've seen it, whether it's in war or traveling the world or even in your local community, when you stumble upon it and see it, that evil may look like you or I, but its desires of destruction are beyond anything any human created by God would ever do. Children are the keystone. So as I begin, I'll bring this to a close. Christianity is the only world religion that gives you an adequate philosophical, logical, and theological argument for the uniqueness and inherent value of humanity. Following Christ means following Christ and how he views humanity. Take away God's or Christ's view of humanity, and all else goes with it. And once there, any horror against humanity can be justified. So thanks for tuning in. Remember, if you like the channel, please hit subscribe, like the episode, and share it on your favorite social media forum. The Bards of War podcast can be found on YouTube and BitChute as Bards of War. You can also join Bards of War on Twitter and gab.com. All of those links are below. Bards of War podcasts are also available on Podbean at www.bardsofwar.fm. That's www.bardsofwar.fm. Remember to check out Bards of War, Fighting is Everything, the war documentary at bardsofwarfilm.com. Buying a copy helps support these podcasts and future film projects. And if you would like to support this channel with a donation, you will find donation links on the sidebar of the Podbean channel or on the donation tab on the main website. All podcasts are written and produced by Scott Kesterson. Opinions expressed are the individual's only. Interpretation of events are the sole rights and opinions of the podcast presenter and guests. Bards of War and Fighting is Everything are trademarks of Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. All work is owned and copyrighted by Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. Thank you again. You have been listening to the Bards of War podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, out for now.